to move all of our shit from Libsyn to somebody else would have to be just catastrophic, you know? I mean, Libsyn would just have to fall off the map and stop hosting our stuff, and I would probably still stay with them, you know, because
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbach. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, before we get started here, I wanted to mention one important announcement. Very, very soon, on September 24th, we will be opening up registration for Big Snow Tiny Conf, both East and West. So we'll put links in the show notes here. It's bigsnowtinyconf.com and bigsnowtinyconfwest.com. If you are interested in doing a conference with a bunch of other single web business founders and want to talk business and do a little skiing, this is the perfect conference for you. So jump on those links, sign up on the email list, and we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. This week, Dave and I are catching up on some new developments in our business and digging into a steaming pile of bullshit. So Dave, how you doing?
I am doing great. And that is no bullshit. In fact, my goal for this episode is to try to say bullshit 47 times, since this episode is really about bullshit.
Yep. We'll have a great big giant E next to this episode in iTunes for explicit. Capital, bold, and everything.
Exactly.
So, so I think we wanted to talk a little bit about some... So the topic of the show really is bullshit and how to detect it when it's people around you and people that you're talking to, as well as to acknowledge when you yourself are full of shit and deluding yourself or deluding other people around you, how to sort of see it, how to acknowledge it, and how to avoid it maybe. And it really ties into some things that we're both seeing in our businesses. So it's an appropriate topic and sort of pointed towards, you know, exactly what we're doing right now. So kind of good timing.
Exactly. And I won't lie, you know, this particular episode is making me feel, you know, a little bit pit in the stomach, kind of nervous to kind of admit where I'm actually at with SupportVine here. So shall I just launch into that?
Go for it. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I've kind of hinted at this at the last couple of updates that we've had about customer validation and pivoting and trying to figure out, is there some viable way that I can work with SupportVine here? So, you know, I have put in a good solid 5 figures into the development of SupportVine under what I thought was a pretty solid assumption in terms of market validation and some kind of tool that I thought would be useful. But when I started about, I don't know, 4 months ago, and this right here should be everybody's red flag. I started customer validation 4 months ago. I started development 2 years ago. And in that customer validation, I'm not getting all the love that I thought I'd be getting out of this thing. Like, it's not solving pain points that I thought were out there, and the pain points that people are having are not the pain points that really align with the tool. And even if I were to continue sort of building that as a general solution, there are so many competitors out there right now that just kick my ass feature for feature that I will be behind for probably months, if not years, to catch up with them. And so this is looking like something where I would have to sink in just shit tons of money to catch up to these guys. And it looks like a losing venture. And so the revelation, I guess you could say, I've had in the past 6 weeks here is that SupportVine just doesn't have the legs that I thought it did. And I've put in all this time and all this effort. And, you know, I won't lie, it feels a lot like a failure, a huge fucking failure on my part. So yeah, there it is. I just laid it out.
That's I'm crushed just hearing it. I mean, we've been talking about it a little bit here and there off air, I guess, for the last couple of weeks, that you had some concerns about the real market potential of it, given your competitors like Groove and like Help Scout. Those are giant players to go up against. And I guess in my mind, as a novice sort of developer, I would say that your options were to really niche into somewhere where they didn't have an option, or to position your product to somewhere where their product wasn't fitting, making a good product market fit, right? That's kind of your two options when you go up against a big dog. And it kind of sounds to me like you gave those two options a real good shot in the last, month or so, or a couple months, and those options didn't really work out, right?
Yeah, surprisingly, I thought maybe I could niche into the WordPress space, but when I started actually interviewing, well, I did two things. I did that soft launch and I put it out there in all these services through startuplister.com, which they did a great job, but the message didn't resonate with anybody. You know, I had 6 people sign up on the email list. I mean, ouch, right? And then I actually physically talked to people on, shit, sorry. My wife just messaged me. God damn it. How do I shut this thing off so it doesn't bing me anymore?
Real life here. Yeah.
And so in the last couple of weeks, I tried to see if I could pivot into something else. So, you know, if I can't niche into this and I can't, and I'm talking to my friends and that's not working, what else can I do with it? And even that just sort of got a meh kind of response from people. And I found out that the features that I was looking for like help desk analytics and FAQs, they would basically be included in other people's apps already. So it's sort of like nobody's going to pay an extra $100 a month to get that kind of functionality. So yeah, it's definitely a total slap in the face. I mean, it's a dose of reality that I really needed 18 months ago, to be honest.
So, you know, the takeaway is, you know, you hear a lot of things about validating a product before you start working on it. I think it's kind of tough, right? It's easy to say, go validate and get people to give you money before you spend a dollar in development. I think that's just really hard. It's hard for anybody. It's probably particularly hard for someone who's a developer that knows, you know, this problem exists. I can fix it. I could do the work myself, even though you chose to outsource it. But go back 18 months, knowing what you know now, what would some of the product validation or market validation steps be for you to take, so that like someone that's listening to the show here can say, I'm not going to do that and that and that, and I'm going to take these steps to kind of avoid the mistakes that you made maybe.
Well, I guess
not get in the situation you're in, I should say.
Sure. So I guess I'll just start by saying that I think I fell into the classic engineer hubris trap, which is, I understand the problem. I'm just going to start building it because I know how to do that. And in my case, I didn't actually physically start coding it, but I wrote specs. I hired developers. I started managing the project. I mean, what I should have done from day one is get 10 customers that all were like, shut up and take my money, and explain to them what it was that I was planning to do. And until they said, yes, I'll pay for that, don't build anything. And you know, even where I'm at now, I mean, I know that Dan Norris, for example, thinks that customer validation is bullshit and those customer interviews are bullshit, because basically people will tell you, yeah, that's a great idea. Sure, I'd pay for that, because they don't want to hurt your feelings, right? But the reality is, some people are probably going to give you more honest feedback on that than others. And it, you know, it's kind of your job to pick out which ones are giving you that honest validation and they're not just blowing sunshine up your ass, and figure out what real pain points exist out there. I mean, there's definitely other ways to figure out what things are really making people mad. So, you know, customer forums, for example, and just listening to things that are driving them crazy about particular products. So I joined the support-driven Slack channel, which is a place for customer support professionals to hang out and talk. And I listened intently there for like 3 months, but none of them were actually saying, you know, this is fundamentally broken about this tool. you know, they might complain about this feature. They might say, this is kind of slow or this doesn't work really well. But it was like, if you really pushed them on it, they weren't like, yeah, I don't really want to move off this tool. There was definite, you know, total inertia to get off of any existing solution that anybody had. It didn't matter what it was. Desk, User Voice, Zendesk, Freshdesk, Grue, Help Scout, all of them. If you're entrenched in a tool, people want to kind of stay with that tool unless there's like some major event that just pisses them off and they have to get off. But for the most part, you know, that's what I would have done is spend more time listening to and talking to customers, figure out what's really bugging them and what's really driving them crazy, and find out why the competitors aren't doing that.
So Amy Hoy and her 30 by 500 course calls this going on safari.
Yeah, this would be the total sales safari.
Yep. So the concept is go, just like on safari, you go watch and observe your target customers in their natural habitat, right, in the wild. And this takes away a lot of the bias of whether it's a friend or an existing customer, or a customer in like a tangential business that you might have exposure to, takes away all these biases that are inherent in a lot of market validation, because you get a lot of false positives in those, I think. And, you know, when I talk to people about things that I'm doing, it's like, oh, that would be great, or that would be great, or that would be great. In the back of my mind, I'm kind of saying 20% of them would actually pay for this, maybe. Right. And you don't know what that, you don't know what that number is, but having a unbiased data set or perspective on it, like going on safari or going to these forums like you're talking about, I think is a great way to get that data. The problem it doesn't solve, though, is you can't say, this will be ready in 3 months. Will you give me, if I give you a year at half price, will you pay me now? Or whatever, you know, really pre-selling. Or I heard a term today of doing a letter of intent. So some people kind of say, hey, this will be ready in 3 months. Can you sign this non-binding contract, which is sort of this letter of acknowledgement saying, as of today, at these terms, you would buy this product. And I think just that going through that process, even though it doesn't really mean anything, might take that one step further in weeding out some of those people that are just being nice.
Yeah,
if you get into that conversation with them.
I'm going to actually call bullshit on that too.
And
here's why. I think that people, again, if you get into that conversation with somebody and that somebody doesn't want to hurt your feelings, I think that they'd say that and they might sign that. And there might be people that hesitate to sign it. So you might weed out like the people that were really just totally being nice. But even the people that were not totally being nice, if you're saying this is non-binding, then they could still come down the road and say, yeah, I really don't need that. So until somebody really physically signs up with a credit card, I'm going to say that all of that is still bullshit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion on that.
50 shades of validation, right?
Sure. I mean, it's different levels of validation. And I would also say that when you're like browsing around in customer forums, the thing that I found is that people's emotions tend to run very high about whatever's going on right now. So let's say somebody just ran into a bug with a product. They're going to be totally pissed off about that bug. Now, they're going to be disproportionately pissed off about that. And you might think that that's like some fundamental flaw. So instead of just looking at like listening to customers in that forum, you kind of also have to do pattern mining. You have to look to see, are they all talking about something in particular? Like, is X broken for a lot of customers, or is it just this one person? And they might all be talking about, yeah, I have lots of problems installing this. Okay, well, an installation experience problem is not something you can build a business on unless you're doing a productized consulting for somebody else's product. That's something they could fix very easily. So if you're going to build a business around that, you're going to get screwed. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, you kind of have to filter and weed and think about and really critically examine before you can really say, okay, this is genuine customer behavior and this is something I can really trust. Everybody's full of bullshit. Like I said, I'm going for 47 times here, man. And I think I'm already at 10 right now. So everybody is full of bullshit. So you're going to spew your emotional state in a forum at any given time. And you're going to have your perspective and your bias. And that's another form of bullshit. And you might disproportionately, you know, reject other people's perspectives because they challenge your perspective and they might have a valid point, but because of your own bias, you're going to reject that. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff at play here that makes it very hard to accept what any one person says at face value, even if it sounds positive and encouraging towards a particular product that you're wanting to build. You know, I think you kind of have to draw from a lot of different sources. And like, if you talked physically to customers and you went to a forum and you also saw blog posts that all said the same thing, that to me would be stronger evidence than if you just went to a forum and heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I do, and I want to hear the same thing from very different groups of people in different settings. And to me, they keep hearing the same thing over and over is a pretty good tell that the data you're getting is accurate, right?
Right, right.
Especially if it's, like you said, a different type of setting and different groups of people. I think that really helps. That diversification really helps too.
Right. So, you know, that's probably the one thing I wish I had really started 18 months ago instead of doing what I've done now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, I mean, so there's a handful of things that we hear over and over in online business, right? And one is don't spend a bunch of money before you really have good validation. And that's tough, as we're saying, that's really tough to do, right? Another is, you know, so build your email list fast and early. I think that, you know, those are kind of a few of the things that come to mind, but.
Right. Heaton Shaw loves to say, don't write a line of code before you talk to customers. It's cheaper than writing lines of code.
Yeah.
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 And he's absolutely right.
Yep. But it's, as we're saying, it's tough. You're a smart guy that's been doing this a long time. And this is a really tough thing to crack, right? Because you can't objectively say, okay, I'm validated, right? It's like on the sliding scale, you're a 5 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10 of validated, and it's still some risk that goes along with it. And so I think when I think forward of software projects that I'll get involved in, and I would be interested to hear your take on this, I probably will continue to validate along the way as I continue to invest more money in development of a project. So you release, you know, a beta that has to go really well before you continue to sink more money and time and resources into it. And kind of continuing to validate your approach and your niche are probably important all the time. And it probably turns from validation into customer development at some point. But I think they ultimately are kind of the same thing.
Right. And so here's the thing that kills me on this. I knew these lessons from the plugins because when I started the plugins, I didn't, you know, I wasn't really doing, you know, I wasn't going to plugin forums and listening to what they had to say. They were contacting me. They would all come to me and say, you know, Dave, I really need a featured ads module for classifieds. And I kept hearing that over and over and over. And I was like, all right, I'll build a featured ads module because I heard it enough times from enough different people in enough different ways that basically told me this is what they want. They absolutely positively need this. And then I would hear that over and over again for other things. Hey, you know, we need to have, I'm trying to think of one of the other modules that I have. You know, they like right now they're all asking about maps. They want the ability to put Google Maps on classifieds. A clear and obvious win if I keep hearing this over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that I would have learned directly from that, like build a customer list, ask the customers directly what they want, take that feedback. And when you start to see patterns, that's where you start focusing your energy and building a product. If one of them says, I want maps, and another one says, hey, I want this to be responsive, and another one says, yeah, you know, it's working fine, you can't really draw conclusions from that. It's too scattered of feedback. And that's exactly what I was getting with the customer support tool. Everybody had their little pet thing that they said, well, I wish that it did this. You know, I wish that the tool that I'm working on right now did this. Well, that happens to be another feature of another tool. They're just not switching. But if I go ask somebody else, they're like, well, you know, everything's pretty good, but I wish it did this. And the two of those features never overlapped, no matter you know, I talked to 60 different people and I saw so little overlap in what people were looking for. That's when it became sort of glaringly obvious that I wasn't really finding the pain that was going to be the killer app in the space.
I mean, it's kind of concerning from a business sense, right? Of how am I going to sell this and who am I going to sell it to? But I'd imagine from a development standpoint too, you're kind of sitting there saying, I have whatever, 50, 80% of the app done. Where do I go with the rest of it? What's my focus? What features do I need to include and not include? Because customer development should be driving your development process to the large extent, right?
Right. And in the absence of customer feedback, you're kind of like shrugging your shoulders going,
right, just throwing darts at the wall.
Yeah, I don't know. This looks good. Or I like this one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have that guidance. And with the plugins, I had very clear guidance from the very beginning. When I bought the plugin, I mean, people were emailing me saying, when the hell are you going to put this feature in? And I'd be like, I don't know. And when I heard that over and over enough, I was like, I guess I'll put that feature in now because right. You all want it. I mean, and I wasn't really thinking about it in terms of, you know, lean startup or customer feedback or iterative development or anything like that. I was just like, I'm just trying to be responsive. Now I realize that direct customer feedback contributed to the success of the plugins and why, you know, I was pushing out things that met people's needs. But you have to filter, and you know, it wasn't like every time that they came to me with something, I wasn't turning around and shoving it into the plugin. I waited until I heard a pattern because I just wasn't confident enough that one person's guess on this was going to be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good level of confidence to have. But yeah, that's definitely a huge struggle and not a mistake I will be repeating in the near future. Thank you very much.
But it's tough. I mean, I sit back here and have not really gotten into that game yet, but I think about it a lot and I have an idea, which is not the best place to start, but I definitely have a problem that I have to solve. And you know, it's this podcasting analytics bit, and I have a very clear problem that I'm very familiar with. And a lot of our current customers are familiar with. A lot of them say that it's a problem, but I've not gotten past that point with any of them yet. And I even kind of hearing your story and hearing other stories kind of like this, like, you know, I actually took time this week and started like scoping out what this tool would look like before I've really talked to anybody about like, okay, this is what it would look like. And this is what the cost structure would be like. Would you be willing to pay money for this? I haven't had that conversation with anybody yet. And here I am spending, you know, like 3 hours one afternoon this week working on this and trying to scope out, you know, what this tool would look like. And that's just a giant waste of time, right? And so kind of getting back to, you know, this bullshit article a little bit, I was lying to myself, right? I was lying to myself to make me feel better a little bit, right? That like, oh, I know exactly what the problem is and I know I can solve it. And I know this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I wasn't being truthful and saying, I know for a fact that these 10 big name podcasters said they would sign up on the first day. And I catch myself sometimes doing this. And I think everyone that listens to the show probably has done their varying degrees of this and kind of gotten themselves to, you know, kind of what you're saying is like, I knew this, I did it anyhow, and I'm kicking myself in the ass now, right?
right. Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to lie to yourself about, I understand this space. You know, I heard Heaton Shaw say this on a number of occasions, either through his talks at MicroConf or in personal discussions with him, or just stuff that he posts on his blog. He has to remind himself all the time about asking the right questions and not just assuming that you understand the problem. You've got to ask questions to make sure you and the other person are thinking of it in the exact same way. And that's the problem that we all have, is that we jump right to that. I understand what you're thinking. Now I'm going to start talking about how I'm going to solve your problem without really understanding whether you understand their problem or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's exactly what I just did with the customer support tool. I thought I got this. I thought I saw somebody else's validation and took that as a permission slip for me to build this whole thing here, when all I should have been doing is asking other customers. So what do you think of your customer support tools? What's working for you? What's not? You know, very fundamental questions. And that would have sussed out pretty quickly the same conclusions that I just came to in the last 60 days.
I think one thing that's specific to this situation, but that would be consistent with a lot of SaaS tools is switching cost. And the barrier that you will have to overcome to have someone switch from a tool that is kind of core to their business to your new product, and the switching, the pain has to be really severe to overcome the switching cost. I think, you know, project management tool, support tool, an accounting tool, email is easy. Chat like Slack, to overcome Slack now would be pretty tough. So I think when other people are thinking about, okay, how, you know, I'm developing this thing, is it in a realm that is pretty easy for someone to switch from product A to product B? That's cool. So maybe that's a little less risk and you might not have to validate as much. But if you're in an industry where there's a big switching cost, then it makes your product need to be that much better. And one in my field in podcasting would be like a media host, right? So we use Libsyn for this.
Sure.
To move all of our shit from Libsyn to somebody else would have to be just catastrophic, you know? I mean, Libsyn would just have to fall off the map and stop hosting our stuff, and I would probably still stay with them, you know, because the cost to switch and the effort and the disruption to our show would be severe, right?
Huge.
So I don't know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
I would actually argue that not all of those things that you suggested have a high switching cost. So some of them do, like accounting software. You have a ton of data in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
All this reports, history, you know, it's definite pain to move off of that platform. Same thing with customer support tools, project management tools. When there's a huge amount of data involved, I would say that there's a huge switching cost. You mentioned Slack. I don't think there's a huge switch cost to Slack right now. If I wanted to move me and five guys over to a different chat tool, assuming that, you know, the next greatest thing came out, it's not that hard to move. You basically go over there, you sign up for the account, you send five invitations. If they had something that was as or more compelling than Slack, it would probably be pretty easy to switch. Now, if you're talking about things like you need to save your chat histories or you have a bunch of rooms or something like that, maybe that increases the cost. But you're right. It's all about the cost of switching. So if there's an existing solution out there, you've got to be significantly better, and or somebody isn't already using one of those solutions for them to consider it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I ran into something like this with Business Directory when we didn't have a CSV import. So for a long time, people had to physically enter all their listings to start with. And you can imagine that kind of totally sucks.
That was popular.
It was real popular. Yeah. So I kept hearing over and over again, when are you guys going to support imports? You know, how are you going to let other people bring listings in from other systems? And so finally, it was obvious, okay, well, CSV import seems to be the way to go here. And as soon as I did that, I reduced the cost of switching to my system and saw a major uptick in customers because they knew that they could move off of something like Joomla or some directory that they scraped off the web, some other data source that they bought, something from Chamber of Commerce, wherever their source of data was. Now, all of a sudden, I gave them an easier way to get into my directory. So I lowered the cost of switching from whatever it was inside of my tool by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's definitely ways that you can work that on both sides.
Yeah. And I get, you know, going back to Slack a little bit, we have Slack pretty integrated into our workflow now. So we have it hooked into Trello and into Dropbox and into Google Drive and a lot of these things that would kind of increase that over it just being a chat channel. It's almost a quasi project management tool or,
right.
You know, okay. Adjunct to our project management tool.
I will throw on the caveat that if you're using it that heavily with those kind of integrations, then yes, the cost of switching becomes infinitely higher.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know if we talked about this a couple weeks ago. We don't email at all internally anymore.
Right. And you guys rock for that. I'm totally impressed.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I mean, between Dropbox and Google Drive and Slack and Trello, we can definitely share all the files that we need to, you know, whether it's in Trello or Slack, and communicate in Slack very easily. Trello actually is a pretty cool project management communication tool. Coincidentally, this is a total tangent. The guys from Teamwork are going to be at MicroConf Europe. And kind of, I've already connected with one of them, kind of said, hey, you know, I've been toying around with Teamwork for a while. I really would love to just sit down and talk about what we do and not have you pitch me on how your tool is so much better. But I hear both sides of the argument that, you know, yeah, all you need is Trello, or Teamwork really would solve kind of all of your problems and you can just go to one place. So I definitely will be following up on this, because I think it's a question that a lot of people have. This was a conversation in Founder Cafe in the last couple of weeks. And I will be very interested, as someone who's used Trello a lot, and I use Trello a lot too. I'll be very excited to talk to the guys from Teamwork about kind of how their philosophy is different, how they approach project management. I think it would be probably be a cool episode if we do end up switching away to talk kind of in depth about what that looks like. Anyway, total tangent, but I think that'll be an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, I would be very interested in actually hearing how that works out there, because I would like to know, is there a point at which Trello is not going to work for me anymore, and what do I do at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, let's plan on that for a future episode.
Yeah.
So getting back to the theme of the show here a little bit, which basically was spurned from an old article that Scott Birken had posted on his site. And if you're not familiar with his stuff, I would highly recommend going to scottbirken.com and just reading his blog. He has some really great essays on there, and has written some great books as well. So we'll link to that in the show notes. But since we're talking about, you know, the topic of bullshit and why people use bullshit, why we lie to ourselves, why we lie to others, you know, I think it's important to understand some of the motives behind that. And I also think that it's important to have some tools to recognize how to see through bullshit, right? You don't want to continually have the stream of bullshit coming at you and then not have a way to combat it and fight it and recognize it and basically deflect it and get through it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's out there and it comes from a lot of different angles, I think.
Yeah. So given the fact that, you know, basically haven't been totally honest with myself, let's talk about the first reason of why people lie and create this bullshit in the first place. And that's to protect themselves. So obviously, in this past year and a half, at some point, I got to a place where I was protecting myself. I didn't want to admit that this wasn't the right way to go, because I had already invested a lot of time and a lot of money. And the further I got into it, the harder that became to admit. And so there was definitely a point at which I sort of doubled down and I was like working extra hard, thinking if I could just push through this, it's all going to work out. And that was just another form of bullshit. So that's definitely one of the motivations, is protecting yourself or protecting others.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think this is, you know, it's sort of an innate human tendency. So it's one that have to be very intentional to overcome. And the second one that Scott mentions here is that people lie and bullshit themselves or other people because it works, right? So it is sometimes it does a calculated gamble, but, you know, you lie about your homework, or you lie to your boss about, you know, what you're doing at work, or you lie to yourself. Sometimes you get away with it. If there's not the piper to pay at the end, necessarily, you can definitely slide by on this. And so I think that as it pertains to business, sometimes you definitely can kind of just kind of roll with it and get away with not being entirely honest. Sometimes the rubber meets the road though, and you kind of come to this realization at the end. You're like, oh fuck, this is, you know, I lied to myself for a period of time or about a thing, and now I'm down this road and it's a dead end.
Right. Which I think brings us to the third one, is that when we're bullshitting, whether we're bullshitting to somebody else or to ourselves, we might do it because we want to be better than we see ourselves now. I can see that part of my motivation for doing this, you know, wasn't just to protect myself, but it was because if I visualize this project being successful, then that makes me, I guess there's no other way to put it, it makes me feel better about who I am, and it makes me see myself as successful. So, you know, you can look at that as a form of protection, but you can also look at it as sort of a positive visualization. But in the end, you're kind of lying to yourself if you're not being honest about the constraints that are going on in that particular situation. Like I wasn't until I started doing the customer validation, and then, you know, the bullshit's basically falling apart as I'm going through and talking to these customers and getting feedback and finding out, well, maybe this just isn't the idea that I thought it was. So, All right. So let's talk a little bit about the detection. How can you actually detect bullshit and counter it?
Yeah. I think the first thing to this is the blanket rule is that it might call it being cynical, but you should expect bullshit to exist in almost everything. Right. So that being said, and knowing that, you know, the default is that something is false or something has to be proven. The first question to ask yourself or whoever you're talking to or associated with is, how do you know what you know? So if someone just says, oh, well, this is kind of how it's always been, or I know this just because, or, you know, this has always been like this, that's really a kind of a red flag to say, you don't have any hard data. Two, you might not actually have experience with this in the past to give me like metrics that you know from experience give you this answer. And so if you get that, well, that's just because, that's kind of a giant red flag, either, you know, if it's from yourself or from someone else. So if that happens, really question what people are saying. And, you know, it's definitely an opportunity to walk away if they don't have a good reason to back that up.
Right, right. So I would say that the second tool here is another kind of question, which basically is, what's the counter argument to what it is that somebody is saying? So if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you know, I really think that President Obama is the worst president ever. So if they come to you and say that, then you can throw it back to them and say, well, why do you think that they're the worst president ever? Or why isn't he the best president ever? And then you can list out reasons for that. And, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into a political argument here, but, you know, just by using other questions, you can find out more data behind what it is that their assertion is actually built on. And you can do this with yourself as well. It's not just something that you do with others, but it works in both cases. So other questions that you might find useful besides the counterargument one is things like, who besides you shares this opinion? What are your biggest concerns and what would you do to address them? Or what would you need to change in order for you to have the exact opposite opinion that you have on this now? So you can really sort of feel out the depth of somebody's argument there, right? You can get a real sense for how much do they really know about it? You know, do they understand both sides of the argument? Are they just sort of spewing one opinion there that may be less informed than they're expressing?
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And I think this kind of talks and leads into the next one, which is using time as an indicator of truth a bit. So, you know, if something is a flash in a pan, it has less inherent validity than something that has been around for a while, or, you know, a truth that you kind of pondered for a while. So sleeping on something is a good way to sort of process and validate it in your head. So I think a lot of times we are emotional about things and we kind of make a snap judgment about something. So, oh, I heard this, and so that means it has to be that. Whereas if you, you know, if you sleep on it, if you give something a lot of time, talk to other people about it, then I think it makes the truth kind of come to the top. And the other one is pressure. So if you are in a stressful situation, it often leads to sort of bad decisions and accepting kind of bad information as a truth, where if you weren't in a stressful situation, if you had a chance to step back and take a look from a 30,000 foot view, you might come to a different conclusion about something.
Right, right. And obviously somebody who's trying to bullshit you, I mean, let's go for the classic example here of somebody who's in like a multi-level marketing thing here. So you got an Amway person trying to get you into the whole scam there. So they're going to use time and pressure to get you to act on it without really thinking about it and being deeply rational and understanding what the implications and consequences of something are. So they're going to say, you got to do something right now. Look, you can't. Don't think about it. Just sign up now. You'll be fine. You know, that sort of stuff. That's almost always an indicator of bullshit in general. And another indicator that you can usually find is that people who are spewing bullshit at you and don't really understand something also are very jargon heavy. Like they use obfuscation as a way to hide a huge quantity of bullshit. Although one could argue the word obfuscation is a way of saying bullshit, right? Ding, 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 they're just basically trying to, if they can't simplify what they're saying into its most basic element, most likely what they're saying is bullshit. That's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that speaking plain English is a good way. If you are speaking plain English, it inherently raises someone's trust in you. And that's another one that you can use is if you are trustworthy or if the person you're talking to is trustworthy, and this is a very soft thing, but if trust is perceived or earned, then it sort of flips that bias from bullshit is always the way that something goes to if you really trust somebody, then what they're saying in general is true. And so this is kind of flips the switch from a blanket statement of this is typically false and I really have to question it to everything that Dave says is spot on. So I'm going to go with it until something comes up. But, you know, I'm going to assume that it's true off the bat.
Right. And obviously you want to be extremely careful about assigning that level of trust. So that's something that you would only give after you have carefully examined what's coming out of somebody's mouth and out of their actions and their emails or whatever for a long period of time. And then you build up that trust and say, all right, I can generally trust what they have to say until you run into something and you're like, I'm not really sure about that. Maybe I should turn my critical bit up to maximum here.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the framework of, you know, how to, as you're going through your business dealings, your personal dealings too, you know, kind of how to look out for things that might not be true and people might be trying to bullshit you. And then kind of the why of people do that. You know, Dave, I think this really gets into another article that we wanted to touch on. And it really has to do with perspective for me as much as anything. And this is a very recent article. It's just from this week from Nathan Berry, talking about unsolicited advice. And, you know, Nathan kind of lays out a recent experience he had on a mastermind retreat. So I know both Rob and Mike from Startups for the Rest of Us talk about going on a solo retreat every year or twice a year, where they kind of have time to sit back and reflect on their business and their path and their products and their development. But what Nathan is talking about is going on a retreat with four or five of his kind of closest mastermind friends or, you know, people in his group. And they do something really unique. So they ask each person or each of the other people to give them unsolicited advice on their business.
Right. And I know that was the title of the article, but it's even more harsh than that, right? So this is like you get the unfiltered version of basically what would people say about you and your business if you weren't in the room. So it's the bullshit free version, right? And in this particular case, I think the way that Nathan said it was, you know, the four of them would sit around and the one person that they were talking about. So say they were talking about Nathan. Nathan would keep his mouth shut. And he was only allowed to take notes. And then the other three would basically talk about him and his business and their blunt, unfiltered opinions as if he wasn't in the room. And so all Nathan was allowed to do was just take notes. And it was so hard for him to just sit there and be quiet and not pipe up and say, but I could interject any sort of comment at all. He just had to take notes on it. And he said that it gave him some very amazing insights into things that he lost perspective on because he was caught up in his own stuff, right? And so he got to see the external viewpoint of other people that basically were pointing out sometimes that Nathan was really kicking ass. And they were basically saying in the discussion about Nathan, why aren't you doing this stuff anymore? And Nathan had completely forgotten about these things. Like he's just moved on from those and was doing other stuff. And that gave him the insight. Well, why can't I go back and revisit that? But in the context of where I am now, not where I was before. And that turned out to be a pretty amazing leveling up device for him in his business and a way basically to avoid bullshit. Bullshitting himself, and you know, he basically wasn't getting bullshit from others. So that's, you know, when you're in the context of a mastermind, that's some pretty deep trust you have to have in other people to handle their blunt, unfiltered advice like that, right?
Yeah, you know, we so it's funny, I read this article after you sent it to me and immediately sent it to my mastermind group in Slack and said, we're doing this. Or no, I didn't say we're doing this. What do you guys think of this? Two of the three had already read the article and said, absolutely. The other guy read the article real quick and says, that's really scary, which means we probably should do it. But
exactly.
I think in the context of, you know, a 1 hour, once a week mastermind call, that might be a little tough. We're going to give it a shot in a couple of weeks when I get back from MicroConf. But I think for me, in the context of a mastermind call, what this does is it takes away the bias that you give your business by presenting it yourself, right? So if you've been in mastermind for any amount of time, people know you and your business pretty well. And they should be able to say to you, and it's a mastermind or it's friends or colleagues, they should be able to give you that unsolicited, really pure advice and criticism without you framing the situation or the question at all. And I think that's where you kind of get yourself down the road of bullshit. And again, I'll use the mastermind example, but in a mastermind where you say, oh, well, this week I did this and this and this, and we're really making good progress on this. If you didn't do that, your mastermind might come back to you and say, why have you been dicking around with this for the last 4 months?
Right, right.
Which is a very different conversation.
Extremely different conversation, yes. So that level of honesty is going to change your behavior and give you insights into things that you wouldn't normally get from just your regular mastermind. Hey, everything's happy. Look at all the stuff that I gave, kind of update.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm going to send this to my mastermind group as well. And I'll be the first to say, I think it's a little scary too, but I think that what could come out of that is pretty powerful.
Yeah. And I think you have to, I'm sure yours is, and everybody should be. Mastermind is a safe place. It's not always a happy place, right? Because it's honest, but nobody's saying these things to personally hurt you, right? This is not like Quora or, what is it? Warrior Forum or somewhere you go on there. And, you know, if you dropped your pants in there, you'd just get crucified.
I think what you're thinking of is Reddit. You're thinking of Reddit, where they basically come in and troll the hell out of you and, you know, insult your mother and tell them that, you know, your father was a donkey and okay. All this other stuff. Right. Yeah. No, a mastermind is not that kind of place at all. At least not a good one. Right.
No. Right. Right. So I think that you should do this with close friends or advisors, and in a very safe place. Otherwise, it could be pretty damaging to your ego, and make you make bad decisions.
Yeah. I mean, in a mastermind, obviously everybody has a mutual goal of trying to make themselves successful and make everybody else in the group successful. Otherwise, why would you be in a mastermind? So with that philosophy in mind, I think that this very naked, raw advice approach can be very helpful, if not a little scary.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Well, so I did want to bring everything kind of full circle back to, you know, a little bit of what I've learned from the conversations you and I've been having over the last couple of weeks and reading these two articles. Like I said at the beginning, I had sort of planned on starting to roll out this analytics tool and getting in development and starting to develop the WordPress plugin part of it and everything. And I realized after kind of reading all this and thinking about it, and also sort of having, like, you know, the stress of a day job and all this stuff still, I kind of said to myself, I'm not being fair to the current business I have and the customers we have and the team I've built that at some point or at some level rely on me for, you know, their income and their well-being. And really, I'm just kind of pulling the plug for now, not pulling the plug, putting on hold the whole analytics project, because I think the best thing I can do for myself and my business is to continue to grow our core business, because from there, we'll just have a better chance to pivot or diversify into something else in the future if we go from, you know, a good company to a really strong company with a lot of solid customers and a strong base. And so I think that's part of the thing that we learn from all this is every time we want to go do something different, what it's really saying is that you don't want to keep doing what you've been doing because it got hard somehow. And whether it's you're in a creative, capacity and working with customers a lot, and that's a tough thing because they have their thoughts about how something should be. And so working with customers all the time can be kind of challenging. So you might just say to yourself, God, I just don't want to deal with customers anymore. I just want to build a thing and then people will come buy it, which is a little delusional probably, you know, but
yep, more bullshit, right?
But it's bullshit. So, you know, if you find yourself in the situation of saying, I'm going to stop doing this thing that worked and go do something else, you're lying to yourself that it's going to be better, especially if it's just because it's hard to keep doing.
Yep. Totally agree.
So yeah, that's my kind of two cents, I guess, for my side of this conversation. But, you know, Dave, I'll be real interested to, you and I talked about offline a little bit, but sort of be interested to hear kind of what your next steps are with this. So, you know, if this is really kind of at least on hold for now, you know, what your next steps are. And I know you've been doing some different things in the WordPress space, but maybe really cool to see how you go about, you know, sort of pivoting the business focus and growing those things, you know, from here. I think that'll be real neat because fresh off of what you've learned, I think you'll make some really cool decisions.
Well, thanks, man. I hope that my raw emotional state and the, you know, sort of the magnitude of what's happened here helps guide me to a better place. I mean, it's definitely been a tough emotional place to be for the past four weeks. And, you know, when I brought this news to my wife, she was surprisingly understanding. I was kind of like, I feel like this abject, utter failure. You know, I've spent a huge amount of money and here I am 2 years later and I've got a product that I can't get people to buy and I'm going to be years behind. And she's like, yeah, but we're okay. And you didn't, you know, bankrupt the family and you did this in a smart way. And, you know, you did finally find a way to put the brakes on it and you've learned something. And, you know, she kind of put it all in perspective. So that's pretty amazing. I mean, I have an amazing wife and I'm very grateful about that. So given that I've got this great support, I think I can turn this into something a lot better and make a good pivot here from there.
Nice. Yeah, I'll be really interested to see what that looks like. It's going to be very cool. Cool. Well, so I'm off. We're leaving Friday for Europe, for MicroConf Europe, and we will be doing a hell of a lot of podcasting. So, you know, to everybody kind of stay tuned for some insights from Barcelona. Be a really good time, I think, and a lot of interesting conversations. So we'll be having those on the podcast here in the next couple of weeks.
Looking forward to hearing them. And if you guys have any questions or comments about how you've managed to get through bullshit yourself, or you have some comments about the bullshit that we've been spewing, email us.
Not possible.
Email us podcast@roguestartups.com. And we'll look forward to hearing you there.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.